Welcome to Amigo Radio 5.8.
It's by how many games we've had now. That's how I can
we
figure this one out.
We are taped at the Bow Store because something OBS. There's a thing that didn't. It's all right.
It just happened. It just randomly happened. We didn't change a thing, I swear.
But anyway, about speaking of things that are mysteriously broken, we'd like to welcome in Richard Hogue.
I'm going to take that segue. You know, live taped is good enough for Jimmy Fallon. It's good enough for you, Brian. Yes, no, I appreciate it. I am not broken, at least not nearly as much as the NCAA, I would say, right?
And, of course, Mr. Hogue is our law-talking guy. Is that like the official law-talking guy?
We have several lawyers among our sponsors.
Yeah. That's true. No, we all talk different law.
We have a whole list of sponsors, in fact.
But the NCAA has come under legislative fire recently. They've responded in kind with public relations of their own, and we thought we'd bring in Richard to talk about it because he knows what he's talking about, which is not something you could say for about everybody who reported on what the NCAA just did.
Yeah, I mean, isn't that the interesting part? Is that the non-cynical version of this, the non-maybe lawyer version of this, is that people are just so excited about any movement at all from the NCAA after seeing all of this for so long. And certainly, you know, from my neck of the woods, for people that know me on the video game side of things, people were so excited that there could possibly be an NCAA football back now, regardless of whether these players and all these human beings get their likeness rights.
Right.
EA could release an NCAA football game, that all of these things got reported in big-time outlets. Sports Illustrated, Sporting News, Fox Sports, everywhere else.
The Washington Post.
The Washington
Post. Posted on this. And didn't read. It's like they all put out, and this is what really frustrates me. The NCAA, we should say exactly what they did.
We should.
They put out in response, they're like, oh, we had a working group meeting, and we passed this thing, and we passed these decisions where they're going to do exactly what they've been doing now.
So the working group is a small NCAA-associated
right.
group.
With Gene Smith in charge.
Which
it is, yeah.
Will come out with some sort of final recommendations. And then there are like 17 other votes.
Right.
That have to like actually transpire before this becomes the NCAA bylaws. And everybody reported this as like that the fact had been accomplished. You know, that the NCAA had just thrown the doors open and
right.
like, all right, it's done.
They didn't even read the press release that they were basically releasing for the NCAA.
Right. So let's figure out exactly what they have done.
That's right. So the very first paragraph of what they actually released, which was only a couple days ago, it's October 29th, says most of what we want to say here and what we're going to really talk about, because this isn't what was covered by these other outlets. In the association, the NCAA's continuing efforts to support college athletes, the NCAA's top governing board voted unanimously, that's what they wanted, they wanted that to be quoted, and
right.
it was, to permit students participating in athletics the opportunity, so that's an important word, to benefit from the use of their name, image, and likeness. Great, so far, right? If the sentence ended there. But it doesn't end there.
Yeah.
It says, in a manner consistent with the collegiate model. And to my eye, and this is what I wound up tweeting about and putting on my social media and discussing in my own videos and things like that, was that that language, a lawyer looks at that and says, okay, that's a proviso. That limits what we just said in the previous sentence. So it very much matters what the NCAA thinks about likeness rights and what they do to the quote-unquote collegiate model. Because all they have basically said is that we're going to look at this. And there are a lot of bullet points that we can talk about and a lot of language we can talk about how they're even going to try to figure out how this works at the end of the day and whether or not this says what we think it might say. And what they certainly hope we read it to say. But consistent with the collegiate model, there's so much heavy lifting on this that it almost completely evaporates the overall thrust of what they want you to take away.
It's basically saying, we're going to let you have a beer consistent with the model set by the teetotaling grandfather who doesn't like beer.
Yeah, exactly. It's a
state. Could have said prohibition. That would have been.
Teetotaling is such a great word.
Anyway, so there were certain actual things that this laid out that they wanted to prohibit, correct?
Well, what this actually winds up saying, and so I have some quotes here from the NCAA, and they go on and on and on and say how great this is. And I think you've probably talked to your audience about the background, at least to some extent, about what's happening with legislation across the country.
Yeah.
But overall, this was designed to get in front of that and at least say the NCAA is doing something. All you other legislatures, maybe put a pause on your bills so we don't have to worry about 40 different ones of these. And yeah, they went forward and said, we are going to think about this. I mean, the important part about what this says, I read the beginning, the end of this says, this working group will continue to gather feedback through April. So regardless of whether or not those bullet points work for you or they don't work for you, this isn't even a statement that anything is happening now or imminently. They're going to continue gathering feedback. They're not even going to go forward with rule changes until, hey, we're going to take some emails and some calls. We're going to talk to some stakeholders, because a lot of people that are invested in making money off the NCAA, especially football, are going to have some things to say about whether or not this makes sense for them. We're going to collect that feedback all the way through April, and then we are going to aim at getting rules done by January 2021. And those rules, when they're done by January 2021, will have a comment period, will have a whole number of other things that go with them.
January 2021, they release what they actually feel the rules should be.
Possibly.
Possibly. And then we go through the NCAA legislative process.
Well, I think you're supposed to have something that is legislation ready in January 2021. Whether or not that happens, it won't. But whether or not that happens is a large part of whether or not their process for the year between now and then actually works and whether they get feedback that is workable. And one of the questions of this whole statement is any of this workable? Right? So the bullet points here, which is what they're actually aimed at. This is what they say they want to do. They want a rule that does all these things. And we can talk about them one by one. We can talk about them all in a group, whatever you like. The first one is assure student athletes are treated similarly to non-athlete students unless there is a compelling reason to differentiate.
So that sounds good. And then you get the proviso, right?
Right. Which to me sounds like, as long as we don't have to pay them, we can pay them.
Well, and that's the thing, right? So,
or if you pay all the students, it's okay.
Well, no, so it's like, you know, people say these things about, all right, well, if I'm a computer engineering student and I go have an internship and I can go get paid for that.
Absolutely.
Like, that would be something that a collegiate athlete wouldn't be able to do, because you can't go, like, in the summer, you know, intern with the Ravens or whatever.
But in the same stroke, right, with that particular bullet point, you imagine that computer science student. He's never going to have the opportunity, one wouldn't think, or she, to have just likeness rights license.
You never know.
It's just going to be...
There's esports.
Bob or Jill is on our commercial because they exist as Bob or Jill, the computer science student. So at its fundamental level, the fact that you are on the Michigan Wolverines or anywhere else in the country on a sports team and are able to get essentially passive income from your face is not the same as a non-athlete student, period. So they have to get over that. So this bullet point starts out by saying, we need to make sure they're treated the same, except this isn't the same opportunity afforded to non-student athletes.
There are some things that I think that would cover.
Okay.
So there was a story about Britton Covey, who's somehow just a junior at Utah still. and he said that he had a marketing internship lined up over the summer.
Okay.
That the NCAA said he couldn't take because it was a sales position, and that it's possible that he would make sales based on his...
Because he's a sports star.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that's the kind of thing that
sure
would no longer be prohibited.
I think so. And I think you're kind of your YouTube channels of the world, right? You've had these kinds of instances where maybe somebody has a moderately successful YouTube channel or any kind of other monetized social media presence, and the NCAA was potentially getting in and saying, oh, we're not so sure on a very facts and circumstances basis.
The thing is, well,
there was a particular case with a backup kicker at Central Florida.
Okay.
So he had a YouTube channel that was not about being the backup kicker in Central Florida.
You wouldn't imagine that was a high level of likeness, right?
It was just a kid who was doing pretty well, you know, making a name for herself on YouTube, and they made him shut the channel down.
Sure.
That kind of thing, I think, would be opened back up.
Yeah, I think that, and that's the possibility that maybe that bullet point affords. But again, that's not the possibility that the Washington Post and the Sporting News or whoever's going out there with, and it's not what California is trying to address or Florida or where have you.
Right, and it's... We should mention this has already been addressed. They put something out there last year where they could actually create, and they have to do case by case, but basically what they said is that if Delonte Hollowell wants to have a crochet company, he can, because no one's going to buy crochet for Delonte Hollowell because he's...
Now I really need that to happen. I just really need to buy like a knit hat from Delonte Hallowell.
Well, so then that's a bad example because you would actually, because your Michigan fandom would cause you to want Hallowell fandom.
I mean, he doesn't have any eligibility, so it's like.
But. Right, but no, I saw a current a California State backup kicker could have a crochet company.
We're talking about a real thing that happened to a Boise State running back who was knitting and selling hats. And
right.
They did like a TV segment on it and he had to stop doing it.
Yeah, you know, I mean,
right.
Because someone might buy a hat from him because he plays
right.
Football.
And what the NCAA came back to was, look, if he was doing it before he signed a national letter of intent, which is when you sign these rights away, and if he was doing it, if he's not like a big star, people can't buy hats just to like give money to a player that they want to give money to, then it's okay. So Shea Patterson can't do it because people will buy hats in order to like make Shea want to go to Michigan.
Okay,
but. You know, this backup kicker could. That's what the NCAA already said.
A piecemeal, case by case.
Minute, almost barely relevant thing.
And here's the thing I can promise, regardless, when we get through this whole list or not, when this rule, if it ever happens, if it's ever drafted, if it ever comes into existence in 2021 or later, it's going to have so many carve-outs and caveats that it's always going to reserve that power to the NCAA.
Right.
It's always going to be facts and circumstances. There's always going to be somebody out there getting screwed over in a way that doesn't make sense. And then until they get in a situation where the states are getting mad at them, they won't address it. And so that's ultimately where we wind up.
What's bullet two?
Bullet two, maintain the priorities of education and the collegiate experience to provide opportunities for student-athlete success.
What's number three?
Right? So that's your... But before we go on, the bullet number two, and they have a couple of these, essentially just aspirational, oh, remember why we get all the tax breaks, everybody.
Right.
The NCAA is glorious, and we're all about the student-athlete experience.
It's the academic sweater that they put on everything.
We can't have the filthy lucre come in and prevent these wonderful student-athletes from learning and engaging in the educational experience.
Look how much we care about academics. We made a bullet point.
Indeed, its own bullet point.
Three.
Ensure rules are transparent, focused, and enforceable, and facilitate fair and balanced competition. So this is going to be matched with another one of the bullet points, but basically they are very, very concerned about the recruiting process as part of all this. Because, as you might know, it's a little easier to sell your likeness rights in Los Angeles and New York and other media markets than it might be in Iowa or Nebraska or South Dakota. And so the NCAA has never quite figured out how to grapple with that. And so that's part and parcel to these rules. I don't know that there's a good solve for this that doesn't that at least involves a market solution.
Go ahead.
I don't think that that's really a concern that is valid right now, because look at, you have an increasing concentration of high-end recruits at a smaller number of football schools, a smaller number of basketball schools. Like, it's not like there's a whole lot of AJ Epinesas out there, right?
No, and I think you can say Southern California has the advantage of the beach in Los Angeles and these various other things, but if you are the NCAA, and I'm playing devil's advocate here because I really hate this press release, I think you do have an obligation to at least say, hey, if we have any reason for being at all, it's to make sure this league functions in some kind of fair way. And to the extent that we're creating rules and we're crafting them, if we do it wrongly and it somehow advantages these places where you can have higher cost likeness rights, and then everybody that's good should go to USC or wherever because you can get more marketing money there, they should really be thinking about that. This bullet point doesn't bother me for that. It just bothers me for what the states are presenting as the alternative.
I think you guys are giving them too much credit and that this is the most cynical bullet point possible, because they are more than aware. These guys, Gene Smith knows exactly the recruiting that Ohio State gets versus anybody else in the country, versus Alabama, right? And what they're trying to preserve is the system that is already unbalanced towards people who cheat.
Enforceable.
In a manner consistent with the collegiate model, can only be read as the status quo.
Yeah.
Exactly.
All right. Next.
All right. Make clear the distinction between collegiate and professional opportunities.
Oh, my God. That's that is the most parochial thing.
And very difficult to imagine in a rule set that maybe isn't, 70 pages long with 45 qualifiers.
Right. I mean, the thing is like, right now, you can be drafted as an NHL player. And you can still play college hockey. And
there's some of that in baseball, too, right? I mean,
if you don't sign your rights, don't... don't continue on. So okay. If like you're a high school kid and you get drafted by the Tigers and you don't sign, the Tigers no longer have your rights.
Okay.
But in hockey, you know, you get drafted before you get to college and they maintain their rights until your whole career is over. So, you know, they can sign with agents now. They can go to camps. They can like go to like the summer camps for these NHL teams if they pay their own way. So they have this incredibly weird and paranoid stance that like this guy who someone thinks can play pro hockey mm-hmm. is
going to
pursue that. And it's just like, but we don't want them to pursue it too hard.
And one of the things you won't see in this bullet point list, spoilers for the rest of the list, I suppose, is they don't discuss how this would look logistically for the player at all.
Right.
They don't talk about agent rules. They don't talk about anybody helping you out with what could be a very valuable contract for your likeness rights. Mm. And so they aren't anywhere close to kind of figuring out what this looks like in practice. These all should be read as aspirational, if nothing else.
This one, to me, sounded like an aspirational lawyer thing, because they got student-athlete written into the thing. Well, sometimes you have people, lawyers that you go against, right? But it sounds like they had got student-athlete into the language in the 50s when they went through this whole process before.
Yeah. Sure.
And this time, now they want to have language of athletic versus collegiate.
Collegiate versus professional is just...
Very difficult. The next one is probably the one that I find the most problematic. It is make clear that compensation for athletics, performance, or participation is impermissible.
So that rules out EA Sports, right?
Maybe. I mean, I don't know that they've actually even really fully thought this out. I mean, what is a likeness right that is completely divorced from the fact that you are on the football or basketball team? What does that even look like? You are not getting offered this contract if you're not on those teams. And I think all this really says to me is that maybe a license right or a contract that you enter into with a third party can't have in it a provision that says if you get injured or kicked off or whatever, the license goes away. That's really the only thing that I can read into this as even kind of a concept, because otherwise we are only talking about likeness rights for student athletes as student athletes. We're not talking about anything else.
I think you have to look at this as something that was crafted by people who are active participants in this corrupt system.
So they know what
$50 handshakes look like after, like, you know, oh, you had 2 touchdowns, you get $100. That happens all the time in college athletics.
Oh, man.
And so they're putting a bullet point in specifically to outlaw things that they know have been going on for 40, 50 years.
All right, next one's a doozy.
Yeah. No, I mean, but to me, that one is a significant problem, because you it's very difficult to imagine if the NCAA wanted to make trouble for someone, especially if they got something that was very high on the market for their likeness rights, that the NCAA could say, we don't like this person, and that's clearly only, you're only getting that money because you're the quarterback in Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. And if you have that rule set all allowing the NCAA to interpret what is essentially for participation or performance. I think performance is easier. You don't get $100 per touchdown.
Right. Yeah.
But just participation, the NCAA is going to have a lot of power and authority to determine a market, to depress the market, all in a way that the states right now, California, Florida, everybody else, are not contemplating.
So, this could be interpreted as we're not going to allow $100 handshakes after you get a sack, that kind of stuff.
Right. Well, they're definitely, I think
so
it's no very clear.
Performance incentives.
There's very clear you can't have performance incentives in your contract. So presumably that includes bonuses for things like if you win the Heisman Trophy, it doesn't go up automatically and things like that. I think that's easy enough to quantify and to write a rule about. And that doesn't bother me as much as, oh, you say it can't be based on participation. So are you going to set up a rule and a structure where we're essentially all just putting our heads in the sand, closing our eyes, and pretending like these contracts don't have anything to do with the fact that you're playing football in Michigan.
And this one also goes
I think that can't be what it is, otherwise there's no change to any of the rules.
Right.
So, like, in a narrower view, then I feel like, all right, so what's it about? It's like, all right, you can't have performance incentives.
I think performance is fine. I think performance is fine. Participation is a problem. And I don't view these as intractable. I think these were written to be specifically what the NCAA wants you to look at and focus on is what it wants to be aimed at. But the rules, as we analyze, as we go through these bullet points, they can't actually look like all of these things, because then nothing changes at all.
All right. Next bullet point.
Yeah. You wanted the next one, didn't you?
Yes.
Reaffirm that student athletes are students first and not employees of the university. I wonder I wonder why they would be concerned about such a labeling.
Hi, Mr. Fitzgerald.
Indeed, indeed. The Northwestern student's eyes perked up.
But this is not something that the Skinner, the Nancy Skinner bill from California challenges, right?
So
this
not to my knowledge.
So this is just boilerplate that we don't want our status quo to change.
Right. So there's this concept, right, where if you have this kind of, if it does somehow relate to your performance and it starts to look like employee payment, even if it's not coming from the school, that you might get into a national labor relations type situation where you can't win that argument with Northwestern as easily. And this actually dovetails with another thing that I saw this week, which was, I think it was a Republican senator was saying, if this goes through, he's very angry, you know, senators on Twitter, you got to watch out for him. If this goes through, then we should tax all of the scholarships received by anybody that gets likeness money.
Which is probably illegal, I think.
Right, no? We were talking about some constitutionality on Twitter. I don't know that it's necessarily unconstitutional as much as I would like it to be. It is just a bad idea, fundamentally. Yeah. And so you get these kinds of arguments, but if you start taxing the scholarship money that athletes receive, I mean, you're really getting close to employee-level kind of discussion, right? Because that's money directly from the university. They control their day-to-day. They provide their hardware. They tell them where to be and when. You're really, really walking that line.
And the athletes are already... Athletes are only a small percentage of the number of people, students who get scholarships in America. Yep. If you're going to start taxing scholarships as income, then you are opening a humongous can of worms.
Yeah, well, I mean, the lawyer in me can actually tie it to, if you want to say you only lose this right to be tax exempt if you get likeness money as well, then you could aim it essentially at the athletes and say, well, the comp science guy isn't going to get a likeness rights license sold.
See, I have no problem. If they want to tax the money that they make, like you buy a Denard jersey and part of that money goes to taxes because it's income. It's income.
They will income tax that. There's no question they'll tax that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think with the NCAA's problem is once they have income that they're getting taxed on, there is a very good case that they can make that they are labor.
All right, let's continue.
All right. They just have a general bullet point for enhancing the principles of diversity, inclusion, and gender equity, which I don't think actually pop up in this rule, but great. And then the last bullet point is protect the recruiting environment, which really doesn't have anything to do with student athletes at all. But, you know, the NCAA, you got to respect it. They do let the mask slip just a little from time to time. And prohibit inducements to select, remain at, and or transfer to a specific institution. So again, you've got that same kind of concept for fair and balanced competition, which is you don't want to have licenses that are wildly varied across your schools. And unfortunately, that's just the way it is. You go to a blue chip, you're going to get more money than if you go to a MAC school. And if you go to a better blue chip than a worse one, you're going to get better money. And you do have the problem here. You know, I'm sympathetic to the NCAA saying, if we just allow likeness rights, and we just allow these third parties to come in and make this money, give this money, you are going to fundamentally shift what college football, college sports in general looks like.
No, you're not.
You don't think so?
No, because it's already happening.
All right, it's happening. So you think a black market and a fully above board market results in the same kind of looking market portfolio?
Yeah. I mean, like, it changes some things. Like, there are certain schools that aren't going to play the game.
Yeah.
Or don't play it quite as well as, like, a Clemson or an Alabama. Like, Ole Miss, for
right.
One. Like, there's...
You can't be that obvious, Ole Miss.
Like, there's people who aren't playing the game. Like, I don't think Notre Dame's playing the game. I don't think Michigan's playing the game. I don't think Stanford's playing the game. When this comes in, they get to play.
But that's what I'm saying. So one could accuse you, Brian. I wouldn't do so, of course, not sitting here in front of you. But one could accuse you of saying, Michigan is either bad at or not playing this game,
yeah,
has blue chip status, and has money.
I've made this argument explicitly many times, so you can go, you can hit me with it.
And it should be made again. Michigan fans should be all about paying players because we can pay them. The only reason we're not is because the rule.
Because Michigan is sitting pretty to take advantage of this if opens up the doors. But that market
Gene Smith is in charge of this thing.
So that market looks decidedly different than black market because there are going to be people that aren't willing to participate in that market.
But the number of people participating in this market already is high.
I agree.
So we saw with Kansas. I mean, the FBI investigation. Kansas, Louisville,
right.
Mizzou, everybody in the SEC.
I agree.
Like Clemson. Like, we know for a fact that a large percentage of the Power 5 programs that care necessarily like about winning.
About winning, yep.
Are already doing this. So introducing a few more players into the game doesn't fundamentally change it.
All right. Well, we can agree to disagree on that, and obviously nobody knows, right?
You disagree with that,
though. I do disagree, because I think Michigan and Stanford and these other kind of blue chips with that money, with that base coming out, will fundamentally shift talent and dollars away from the South and the Southeast in particular.
Okay, but...
And from Ohio State.
Is that a problem?
I count them as the SEC. I don't know why. It's very weird.
Like, I don't... Like, so, if the issue is we need a level playing field, like, introducing more people who are playing by approximately the same rules actually levels it more than we have right now.
Oh, I think the same rules absolutely levels the playing field. The fact that you have to actually focus on having what should be fair rules and say we want to make sure it's level and fair, I agree with Seth, reads as we think any kind of change would not be level or fair. We're level and fair right now. So we have to make sure not to change it. And that's what they're scared about, because it will change it. It will fundamentally change it. That's my opinion,
so if you're,
not yours.
You're like, but that requires like a full-on ostrich approach.
Well, it's the NCAA. Have they ever done anything else?
But you said that you disagree with it.
I disagree with you.
Yes.
Right.
Why?
Because I think it will change what NCAA football and NCAA sports looks like when these likeness rights, which I do agree with, should be out there. I would have them all. Because of the additional players and because of... To some extent, if that money is up above board, the black market money, which would still exist, let's be honest, will be less powerful in terms of it being less on a kind of macro scale for the money that's in the system.
So there are changes that will happen.
Yeah.
But are you opposed to those changes?
Not at all.
Okay.
Not at all. No, I would be opposed to what I think is likely to be the result of this process and these bullet points in general. Because I don't think this is going to wind up with anything. Because, I mean, the other part of this is, I obviously harped on in a manner consistent with the collegiate model, but I think you probably remember from a couple months ago, you had the president of the NCAA come out and say likeness rights are an existential threat to the collegiate model. That is the NCAA's current stance. And
publicized. Then everybody was like, all right, sounds good, let's go.
Right. Well, what happens then is California passes it, at which point Mark Emmert sends a letter that says, we're kicking all the California schools out of the NCAA, which I wind up putting on social media saying, the hell they are. Yeah, there isn't a chance on the planet Earth that they're kicking the California schools out of the NCAA. So they eventually relent with a task force and a working group and a request for comment or whatever.
Right.
But at the end of the day, right now, it is still in their offices, at their headquarters, the understanding that what California is trying to do and what Florida is trying to do and everywhere else is an existential threat. And they're trying to make rules that make them not an existential threat, and never the twain shall meet. So I don't think they are actually trying to do anything legitimate to get likeness rights out to the players, to get anything out like we would expect from what we've seen in the California statutes or what's proposed in Florida. And they're just trying to get out in front by saying, hey, look, we're good guys, and we're going to try to do something that looks remotely palatable so that we can keep this train running for 10 years. Because the train tracks are running out, but we can still put them in front of the train for a while yet.
Right. So, you know, insofar as whatever rules they come up with conflict with the California bill, the California bill supersedes them.
Well, it's the law, and the NCAA is not the law yet. So if the California statute, as I understand it, basically says that an organization like the NCAA can't have in its bylaws a requirement that you can't make money off your likeness rights as a requirement for participation in that league. If that doesn't change, if the NCAA doesn't adopt a law like that, and the reason we're talking about this kind of all in the future, if your audience doesn't know, is the California law and to some extent the Florida law, they don't go into effect for a number of years.
Well, the California law doesn't go into effect until 2023. The Florida one, if it passes, is next year.
Right. There are two Florida bills. There's one that's on like 2022, like somewhere close to the California timeframe. And then there's one that says, let's kick them in the butt. And I don't think either one has been signed right now.
I don't think either one has passed the legislature. They're just in the legislature.
Yeah. And there, I think there is some, at least as I have read it, there are notions that one or both will pass, that there's really momentum there in Florida. But right now, California is all that's on the books, and it goes out for a number of years yet. So the NCAA has some time to get its stuff together before then. But if all of this was in effect and the NCAA had a rule that didn't give all those rights to players that California would require, then yes, California would essentially not be allowing the NCAA to have those bylaw provisions, and there would be a conflict, probably resulting in a lawsuit of some kind, depending on how the NCAA responded to that.
So it feels like what's happening here is the California legislature is driving, and this is the NCAA's desperate attempt to wrest the wheel back.
Absolutely. That's exactly what this is. It's not just California, though, and it's not just California and Florida. I believe there's probably seven or eight states that have things in various...
New York has one, too, but New York's is really badly written. I don't know how in the weeds you want to get to that
one. The strange thing is, like, if if I'm a state legislature guy, why don't I just grab the exact same bill California has?
Well, my sincere recommendation for all legislatures is to never grab the exact same bill that California has. But that's an entirely different discussion.
In this case, we can make an exception.
Well, no, I actually think, you know, California, and I'd have to, I don't have the language in front of me, and it's one of those kinds of things that you could parse for 45 minutes if you were so inclined. But I actually remember reading it and not being happy with a couple of the things that they did or exactly where the punishments and penalties yeah. were ascribed. So I think there are things that can be better than that bill.
Yeah.
But certainly for just ease of use, and if you are... if you are in a state legislature, let's say, is somewhat aligned with where California's legislature usually finds itself, you might be able to do that.
Well, so I feel like we see it come through the California legislature, and it's passing, I think, unanimously at most steps.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there was any pushback on this in California.
And then you have Mitt Romney in the U.S. Senate, like, basically saying, yeah, this is stupid. We need the NCAA to yield these rights.
Did you see his interview? It was very weird. I mean, it's Mitt Romney. So I mean,
I only saw like an article on it, but
okay, yeah, no, it was very weird. You know, he had a whole set of comments about the fact that he didn't want different players driving around Ferraris and things yeah. like that. And so, yeah, I think
it feels more bipartisan than just about anything these days, though.
Yeah, no, except for attacking Blizzard, which did have full bipartisan support. But we'll say that for another time.
He has a gaming podcast, by the way.
I do. Gaming Law, Virtual Legality. Check it out, YouTube. No, and in fact, that letter was by like AOC and Mark Rubio. And like, yeah. it was a whole cadre of unusual alliances.
Strange bedfellows.
Yeah, strange bedfellows.
It's amazing that this issue is what brings Americans
it's
together.
It's easy. It's so easy.
Hating foreign countries always brings Americans together.
No, even that we're not good. We can't even do anymore.
All right. Let's stay focused.
Before we dive into
accurate.
That.
Accurate. Let's stay focused.
Before we dive into that.
No, not before.
No, I do think what I think the NCAA sees, and I think they are right to see it, is a general political momentum across the country and probably internal polls that they have or what have you that show that there is a general belief that this is a right thing to do for these student athletes. Yeah. And so once you cross that kind of Rubicon, once you have these states essentially saying, after you send what amounts to, you know, the White House letter that says, if you do this, we will blow you up. And they say, give it a try. And they vote on it and they sign it into law. Then you've lost all power. It was always a bluff.
Yeah.
And now all the other states say, all right, well, we should all do this together anyway. And the only ones that aren't are probably more likely to be well ensconced in the status quo, right? So you probably aren't going to see this adopted necessarily until the political momentum really shifts by those that are really happy with how the current NCAA lays out.
Mississippi and Alabama will be state 49 and 50 to pass this.
Possibly.
I think Mississippi might get on board before Ohio.
I would guess that Alabama's going to be dead last, but not necessarily. You don't know. And this thing can shift really fast because I do think you see those outside the lines reports. I do think you see general sympathy for why shouldn't these guys be treated the same as every other student on campus.
Well, and there's also become this kind of selfish aspect, especially in basketball. Because if you look at a guy like Isaiah Todd, who's considering playing in Australia for a year, if you're a Michigan fan or just a fan of college basketball in general, you'd like him to play in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah.
And if he can sign a deal with Nike while he's at Michigan, then he's not going to go to Australia. And the same thing goes for a lot of the guys who are entering the draft. There are more early entries in this NBA draft than there are slots in the draft.
Okay.
So I think there were something like 80 early entries. And all those guys are going to go off and they're going to play basketball somewhere that's not college basketball. So the quality of product suffers. And I want to see those guys in the tournament.
I agree completely, and I'm on your side on this, and I think this is all rigmarole to get around what is happening in these state legislatures. I do think, you know, you're still going to see some pushback from especially the old school crowd that says any kind of money
is going to
change not necessarily who's winning and what the teams look like, but the nature of how I feel about what this product is.
There's a really funny divide between the 24/7 message boards and the MGO blog message boards and the Rivals message boards.
Oh, yeah?
Where, like, everybody on the Rivals message board is like, back in Dickety 6, I had an onion on my belt and nobody got paid nothing.
And we were fine with it. And it all worked out.
Yeah.
And who cares if people got concussions and didn't make any money? And people
Tom Harmon made money.
People on Angle Blog are like, I'd like to stab Mark Emmert.
Yeah.
Which is not my personal opinion. I am relating the opinion of people.
I was going to say, the opinions of your forum are not the opinions of the MGO blog group or anyone associated
that,
with it.
That needs reminding every once in a while. We had an incident this year.
Yes.
Well,
people email us and they're like, your reporting sucks. And I'm like, is that on the message board? Yes. Because you know what we don't do anymore? Reporting. Every once in three. The last reporting we did was 5 years ago, and it got Dave Brannad fired.
Well, damn you for having an open forum, Brian. Yeah, no, that was hot stuff.
Yeah,
that was big time. That was big time.
All right. Well, thank you for clarifying what's going on.
With as much as I can, the NCAA is doing its best to not clarify.
That's what terrifies me the most on this is that number one, the people bought the press release this
FUD,
week.
The FUD just going straight through is like.
Happened very fast.
Yeah, and like everybody just bought it. I'm just like, you gotta be.
Yeah, I mean,
come on.
Read the press release you're putting out. I used to do that on a trade magazine, and that had like 30,000 people. Anyway,
back in my day, onion my belt, doing my trade magazine.
Hey,
that's not quite the hot take voice, but it's
good. Well, I wish I could be on the hot take segment. I have so many good.
We're
ones.
Gonna replace Dave with you just for that segment. Because Dave's always like, I like pudding. I'm like, that's not a hot take. Everybody likes pudding.
We're going to call in Seth with his hot take. But the other thing is that the NCAA kind of like drew a line here. Like, we wanted to wonder where their stance was after like Emmer put his thing out there. Like, this is an existential thing. And everyone's like, okay, bye.
So I feel like this, that is a line. This is, they acknowledge what's going to happen. And they're trying to like soften the blow as much as possible with PR. Which... step one worked as well for them as possible.
But absolutely.
The thing is, I don't think the state legislatures are going to budge. Like, 72 to nothing.
Well, okay.
This was not a controversial bill.
But it's not California, right? When you're talking about this, you're looking at the NCAA, you're looking at who's on the margin. Who are the states that might do something, but you could convince to not do something for a number of years? Because if we can keep this small enough, then we can run those tracks for another couple of years. But that's...
because
you're trying this. This didn't cost anything.
No.
This was a couple pieces of paper.
But if we get to 2023 and the California bill becomes law.
Yep.
Well, do they have to sue now or can they sue like 4 years from now to like drag
who's
it
they?
Out? The NCAA. It feels like they'd have to sue now, but they probably don't.
Well, no. I think that they can hold it off until it's actually enacted. Frankly, it would be more difficult to sue before the actual bill was in effect because you do have issues of jurisdiction and whether or not there's actually a claim or controversy. So they could bring the claim in 2023. They could hold it out till then. They would probably, I think there's enough of a potential antitrust risk and things like that, probably get it preliminarily enjoined for a period of time. And the NCAA, they have enough money. They can take that to the Supremes if they want, where you're talking about a 4, 5, 6 year runway. So, I mean, you've got an NCAA that if they want to make trouble, and I think they understand they're on the losing side of history on this, over the long term, can try to maximize the profits in the medium term. Right. And I think that's what you're seeing here.
All right. All right. Thank you for the down low.
Absolutely. I'm glad
Richard
to be
Hogue.
Here.
Hoguelaw.com.
Right. Hoguelaw.com is
Virtual
the website.
Virtual Legality.
Virtual Legality on YouTube, at Hoguelaw on Twitter. Yeah, it was being on your podcast talking about Last Jedi a couple years ago that started my YouTube channel. I owe you guys some. So, yeah, no, thank you for that. Or you need to apologize to some people, depending on how you feel about the Hoguelaw YouTube channel.
Well, I got to admit, I don't have strong opinions about the Hoguelaw YouTube channel.
Well, you'll get there.
Okay.
You'll get there. We're growing. First anniversary, November 27th.
You just need to talk up Stellaris as a really great game. I'll be like, oh, no.
So I need to get the negative. Yeah. You know, I did notice.
Unless you want me to be positive.
YouTube really does like it when there's like a lot of downvotes on a video. They really pump those videos.
All right, well, you go out there and tell people that the middle part of Stellaris is an interesting game, and you'll get all the downvotes.
I will keep that in mind. It'll just be Brian Cook on there with 16 comments in a row.
All right. You don't even need a hot take segment anymore.
Soul hot takes? Thanks. Thanks, Seth. Support for my podcast co-host. We're going to take a break, come back, and I guess it's time to talk about the Notre Dame game.
Oh, too bad.
What?
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless, it's online, it's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus with all the amenities you expect. Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
We have a lot in common. You rode the bus to Bursley, so did Larry Page, and so did I. And we all love MGO Blog. I'm Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. My entire family went to Michigan State, but I was the smart one finding my way to Ann Arbor to study econ. I've been a financial planner for 17 years, earning the designation Certified Financial Planner, and founded Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. I know you're pretty smart, and you probably have a sweet retirement spreadsheet already. My job is to make sure. As a financial coach, I make sure you're on track, or if you're not on track, I tell you exactly what you're going to need to do. And if you listen, I'll be able to tell you how your future should look, just like the knowledge. And I have cool charts and graphs to tell the story, sort of like the Mathlete. To learn more or schedule time to chat, check out peakwm.com/mgoblog.
The University of Michigan was the place we all came together. It's where we pursued our curiosities and where we rallied around things that really mattered. The Alumni Association has now made it possible for you to reconnect with your fellow Wolverines around endless topics within Alumni Online Communities. It's where you can join in the discussion or start your own on any subject from your career, identity, hobbies, or interests. Go to umalumni.com/communities and keep the conversation going.
Here's a thing people say. Seth, tell me about your insurance.
I'm actually glad you asked me about that because I just changed my insurance and I'm really happy I did.
Let me guess, you use Phil Klein and Owen Rosen of the Phil Klein Insurance Group.
They are MGO blog readers and they don't advertise during football games.
And they've got a 5-star rating on anything you would care to see. Call Owen at 248-682-7445 or visit them online at philklineinsurance.com. Yes, sir. I want you to do this. Welcome back to MGO Radio 5.8. Due to technical difficulties, we are broadcasting live from a bathtub. We would like to thank our sponsors. Our presenting sponsors are the Bow Store and Underground Printing. Associate sponsors, Homeshare Lending, the Residence Inn Ann Arbor Downtown, the University of Michigan Alumni Association, Peak Wealth Management, Human Element, Michigan Law Guard, the Phil Klein Insurance Group, Fuego Box, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Perrin Brewing, and The Athletic.
Here we are.
Also, thanks to Richard Hogue, who came in for a segment that was good.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of fascinating, Notre Dame, 45-14. A little bit of a pick-me-up,
yeah,
you could say, after a disappointing Penn State loss where Michigan probably could have, should have won. This one they left no doubt, and they left no doubt because the run game was the fully actualized last year run game with some speed and space stuff attached.
So that I was looking forward to this UFR more than any game in the last couple seasons, I think. because I wanted to know how much of it was Notre Dame and how much of it was like Michigan players and how much of it was Michigan like
tactics.
Yeah.
So that is an interesting question because so Michigan is able to gut Notre Dame for 17 first half points in a driving rainstorm. And you get the huge RPS pluses and they're up.
Right.
And I'm doing my tallies and they're like up an enormous amount. And then they keep running stretch plays. And Notre Dame linebackers have been running just hell's bells for everything the whole game.
Which is something we saw in the scouting of them, too.
Right, because they're small. That's what they do.
Right.
And then it works against the stretch. They run six stretch plays. The best one of them gets 1 yard.
Right.
And so...
And they're not messing it up. It's because Notre Dame has a linebacker in the gap as soon as they get...
I mean, some of both. Like, you know, they got a reach block on one, and then two linebackers showed up in the gap, and I'm just like, because I love a good reach block.
Yeah.
You know, it's just one of the most satisfying things that you can do. I love David Mulk, because David Mulk was able to get, like, solo stretch reach block a lot. And then when that happens, you're supposed to pick up 15 yards.
Right.
And in this game, Michigan got no yards. I think it was one. And True Wilson had to, like, dodge a guy. So, weird tactical kind of lull.
Uh-huh.
And then towards the end of the game, you know, they kind of get some points back because they start running just power. And so, the two things that Notre Dame
did... And ISO.
Well, the two things that Notre Dame did is they ran hell for leather with their linebackers and they scrape exchange. So, the scrape exchange was responsible for, like, the six-yard loss on the goal line. And some other stuff where, you know, the arc read finally got defeated. And so what are you supposed to do about that? Well, it turns out the answer is just run power because your puller comes around and the end shuffling down. So it's pretty easy just to shove him further inside.
Right.
And then the guy, the linebacker who's screaming outside gets the second guy. And that's an easy kickout block. So you saw just two examples of this. And that's kind of the little blip that I feel like you had in that third quarter, late second quarter, is mostly explainable by the fact that Michigan didn't get to the counterpunch to what Notre Dame was doing until a little bit later than you'd want.
And it's ironic that the counterpunch is their old...
Right, just old, just gap block power.
Exactly the play that Harbaugh was going to come here to run.
Yeah, and so, you know, you look at the big chunk plays Michigan had. You're looking at a trap play for Son Haskins, and then you're looking at the early Charbonnet run where they bring St. Russell into the backfield and motion him out.
Right.
So that takes a linebacker. So it's three versus three out there, and then that linebacker, it's not like you blocked him. Because a linebacker who's blocked is still in the area.
Right.
He can get off the block. He can pursue. He can be relevant to the play. This deletes him.
Yeah.
You know, that's a totally different level of getting rid of a guy. And the spread run game went from bad to very good when deleting a guy became a positive.
Right.
And that happened mostly with the quarterback run. But on that play, Michigan has bought themselves an even playing surface because on a pin and pull, and if you block you don't have to block the backside end. It's like a stretch.
Right.
So you get that back. and then the safety is still looking at St. Ristill like two steps into the actual run.
And they were doing it because of that Penn State game.
Yeah.
And like, so when this is what good offenses do. You show something and you have something work that you haven't done before. And then the next game, they're looking for that and you can do the counter to that. And get yards off it because they know they have to defend the bubble or at least anything out there. They have to defend the spread part.
What I loved about that play is that it's flashy. Mm-hmm. You know, you take the motion and then, okay, safety's eyes go to Sainer still. He flares out. They've been working all week on preventing the edge run game. It's just natural that they're going to be drawn into that because it's not something that Michigan put on film before.
Right.
It's you know, it's good tactical, it's good strategic thinking. And that has been something that Michigan hasn't had for most of the year.
I mean, if you change the pin and pull to stretch zone blocking, it's exactly the same play that Rutgers got that Pacheco run on us last year. Where like they did zipper motion, and the guy steps out, and then you lose the weak side linebacker because he's also stepping out.
I don't think those plays are quite...
Anyway, Anyway, the point was that you lose a safety if you're – they need to maintain numbers, right? And that's what – like, I hate that Urban Meyer was the best analyst on the Penn State game out there this week. But
that is something that is worth mentioning. So he has this four-minute video where he's just talking about evening up numbers in the
right. Right.
And I mean, you know, he did some bad things, but he's also a very good football coach, validating everything I've said about this offense. So I'm going to link it, right?
I Art Briles still knows a thing or two about football. He's just an awful human being.
I don't think Urban Meyer's the best guy in the world, but if he's
I mean, he should be doing it from a jail cell, but like, but, you know.
Well, that's a little severe, but like, but if he's backing me up, I'm going to mention it, you know? So I just feel like we went back to the Hoke era where I'm complaining about bubble screens.
Yeah.
And certain people are like, who cares about this one stupid little play? And that Charbonnet run is why.
Yeah.
Because once you stretch people vertically, you get people looking at the wrong people, then your run game goes from 4 20-yard runs in 7 games to 6 in 1 game.
Right.
So thumbs up. Keep doing it. Why did it take this long?
Yeah. Notre Dame is a team that's not good at the linebacker position, and we knew that. And like one of the plays I highlighted that you I think captured too was like they're shooting a guy outside because they wanted to have two guys outside no matter what.
Yeah.
And
is this the Haskins run on the?
Where like Ruiz like goes out there and then like they're
the guy's just leaving for the field.
Yeah, he's just bolting on like the wrong gap.
He's more like migrating.
Right.
Like he's run out of forage in the center of the field, so he's like taking his cattle
right
to the other opposite sideline.
Get out.
Yeah, and so,
but like Notre Dame was playing unsound all day. They were leaving defense, and they were leaving a gap uncovered every single time on the inside to do that.
So that to me is a Notre Dame screw up,
right?
Like that's just something that is inexplicable and shouldn't happen. And I think there is a certain element to that in what Michigan did. Similar reason that, you know, USC, who's not great shakes this year, got 6.4 yards a carry. So there is some element, some truth to the fact that Notre Dame is not a good rush defense, and that helped Michigan out. But Michigan got 0 20-yard runs against Rutgers,
mm-hmm.
got 0 20-yard runs against Army. So even bad defenses are able to, like, hold it together if all you're doing is kind of mindlessly running inside zone over and over, which is what the Army game was. So...
This exact strategy would have worked against Army. They were doing the same things that Notre Dame was doing.
So when we talk about the structure of a run offense, you want to have a balance. And Michigan has kind of oscillated from one end of the spectrum to the other. Too simple, just doing the same zone play over and over again. The DeBoard strategy, it's hard to get chunk runs off that because you're not making anybody wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you execute... And on stretch, there are ways to execute in which you're going to get chunks. But if you're telling people, here it comes, try to stop it, you know, that's good on 3rd and 1 when you have Wisconsin's offensive line and you can put 2 more linemen in the backfield. But as a down-to-down, this is 1st and 10, we're going to run the ball, it's just choppy. And that's why probably the most remarkable stat in the last 15 years of Michigan football is that so – DeBoard comes in,
right?
Runs the zone stretch stuff. He's got Jake Long. He's got Mike Hart. He's got a lot of players. Michigan's yards per carry went up in the first year of Rodriguez, the 3-9 season.
Right.
Because Mike DeBoard doesn't know what he's doing.
Well, and yeah.
So.
and that was an awful team that he had. That was probably the worst offensive talent that Michigan's
and
had.
And then the other thing that Michigan was doing that was poor was that they weren't running a package of plays.
Mm-hmm.
So they have the arc zone and they don't run split. And arc zone fakes split zone. So
I got all this out of my memory. You're bringing back like week 3 to me right now.
But now they have a bunch of split zone. They have the arc on top of it. They have the pin and pull away. And now they're bringing out a trap. They have like the dart plays, which for people who don't know what a dart play is. I don't know what one is either because the internet doesn't agree. But when I say it, it's basically a zone stretch where you have a down block and then the guy pulling around short. So it's an easier way to get that reach. And that worked for Michigan. Michigan got you know, 17 points in a rainstorm and basically ended the game in the first half. So kudos, keep doing it. On the other side of the ball, there's not really much to talk about because Ian Book was so bad.
Well, I mean, Michigan-Notre Dame at night is going to be stupid to begin with.
I mean, this wasn't just
But this stupid. Was like stupid at a rainstorm like, and then...
I mean, Michigan didn't have a great pass rush. Like, Notre Dame entered this game with like the, well, as of a week ago, they were the number one pass efficiency, pass protection efficiency
right.
team for Pro Football Focus. And you saw that come through. Like, Michigan didn't get free runs. They didn't really get much, if any, pressure on the edge. Uche got one.
Yeah, they. I mean, Michigan wasn't game planning to do that as much, though. They weren't trying to get, like, they weren't blitzing like crazy on this one.
No, but, you know, the amount of pressure that Ian Book was getting was nowhere near the amount of pressure Ian Book thought he was getting.
Right.
And so he looks a lot like Patterson in this game where he's just bugging out of clean pockets.
He would do about one read, and that was it.
Over and over and over again, the worst quarterback performance I've seen in a Michigan-Notre Dame game since, was it Joe Montana's kid?
I forgot about that.
Like, Dane Crist's eye fell out, and like, Brian Kelly's like, you need to go back in, buddy. So,
well, and then their backup had a Tommy Rees moment there, and guess who's his quarterback's coach?
Right.
Tom Rees.
So, the only things that I really drew out of the defense is there was a definite gap in Claypool defense between Hill and Thomas on one hand and then Vincent Gray on the other. You kind of expect that. Vincent Gray is a younger player. He's more of a developmental guy than a couple of highly touted recruits. But hopefully we can see him progress in that department because it was not good.
No.
And then the second thing is that I've never seen a cleaner game from Michigan's defense. Like, I had a total of 5.5 minuses for the whole team, for the whole game.
And that's a team, that's a young defense still, too. It's not like everybody out there is, I mean,
yeah.
Hutchinson is a first-year starter, and McGrone, like, only started taking over this year. I don't think he had a minus this game.
No, he did not. I think he might have won. But, like, so McGrone hasn't had the opportunity to display young linebacker disease recently. Uh-huh. So he's not getting blockers to him. And the problems that he was having in previous games is he'd get a blocker and go upfield of him every time, which is great when it works, and it's a minus two when it doesn't because you didn't find
I was just watching Maryland's defense. They do that all the time.
Yeah, so he hasn't had the opportunity to display the fact that he's a really young guy, but he had had a lot of open field tackles here because Michigan is just spilling everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they pull two guys to Josh Uche, and Uche is able to, like, get into him and pop that guy to the sideline. And then it's over.
Did Notre Dame really think, because their running game seemed to be very sideline to sideline, did they really look at Michigan and say, let's run outside on these guys?
It wasn't on purpose, necessarily.
So Michigan's just spilling them out there.
So, like, so the play I was talking about, that's Power GT, which is Wisconsin's base play.
Right.
And we know from watching Wisconsin that is not necessarily an outside run.
Right.
It can turn into that based on the way the defense reacts.
But right.
No, that's supposed to go up the field.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're running inside zone against the stack and they get 3 yards. And if that's happening, it's over.
I mean, I know we mentioned Army already, but this almost felt like the Army defense, the defense that we're using for Army.
I mean,
like, curl them, pinch them, and then just, like, if they're going outside.
Like, the way that Army plays, like, Kemp just did literally the same thing on every play, and it's different when you're playing an actual diverse offense. But, you know, I have some concerns that Michigan wasn't able to generate much organic pass rush, and hopefully we can keep Uche on the field because that changes things.
Yeah.
But one thing that they did do successfully is they kept him on the field and dropped him into coverage. And that's the thing that the zone buys you.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that jumped out about the zone is the fact that Notre Dame was somehow completely unprepared for it.
That was amazing. I was noticing during the game that, like, can you watch Michigan this year?
It's 3rd and 9. They run a drag, and I'm like, oh, that's a bad play call. And then I get to the video, and I'm like, this isn't just a drag.
Yeah.
It's a drag screen where it's behind the line of scrimmage, and it's literally the only route they have.
Yeah.
And... good luck.
Yeah, and they came. I really think they. I don't know. They just figured Michigan's a man team and let's just start preparing. And, like, didn't go and scout it. Like,
I don't know. They must have. I don't know. They ran a bash play against a too high safety, which is a great play against DJ Durkin's defense, which has like one high safety at 15 yards. But, like, there's no blocker for a guy who's looking directly at the back and watching him run out to the sidelines. So he's just like,
Does he have the ball? Okay.
I guess I'll go tackle him. And then he tackles him at the line of scrimmage, and you're like, okay, guys, that was weird. And like, there's no misdirection. There's no anything. I'd be pretty frustrated as a Notre Dame fan because this was a debacle. And it was a tactical debacle, too.
Yeah. So. They have one of those offenses where the running game and the passing game don't really talk to each other as much. Like, they have two Kellys.
It's hard to tell, like, just because of the – so you have the rain in the first half and – they're behind the sticks all the time, so it's just like...
I wasn't talking about you can't tell in our game anyway, but
Yeah, that's the only game I watched. Like, WTK, like, I was on TK last Thursday, and Sam's like, let's talk about Notre Dame, and I'm like, I have no idea. I outsourced that.
You gave me a shout-out. I liked. That was fine.
Yeah, I was like, Seth is good.
I watch Notre Dame all the time, because, like, NBC is one of the easiest things for me to watch.
Well, I've been a little bit disinclined to watch football on certain weekends this year.
I get it. Cam McGrone, I was going to like say Larry Foote for a while, and then Larry Foote himself said that he reminds him of Devin Bush, so I think we're just there.
I mean, mentally, if he can get to Devin Bush, he's Devin Bush. Like, there was a play in this game where they ran a screen on like 2nd and 19, and McGrone starts running to the sideline, and the Notre Dame guy has two steps on him laterally.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Jafar Armstrong, who's supposed to be their starter.
Right.
He's kind of a quasi-receiver, reputed to be very fast. And, you know, McGrone tracks him down, and it's 4 yards. So, like, if he's in the open field, like, does he miss tackles? No. Is he a great blitzer? Yes. Does he have the game downloaded like Devin Bush does? No. So that's coming. And there's something that he might even be better at than Devin Bush, and that is bring in the wood. So there was a 3-3-5 play. They're running a stretch. Looks pretty good for a second. And then McGrone just fires into an offensive lineman, knocks him back, draws a second guy, and then the back just has to go directly to Glasgow for a stick.
And Bush was a rabid squirrel, but he was a squirrel.
Right. He's
McGrone's a McGrone's an average linebacker-sized player.
Yeah, McGrone's got a couple inches and probably will have 10 pounds on Bush, and that makes a difference.
Mm-hmm.
So... yeah, to get basically Devin Bush out of your third string linebacker at the beginning of the year, oh, that's nice. That's a nice bonus. And we all were hoping for this. It was the best case scenario.
That was his. It was a recruiting pro. Well, I mean, Bush is like you said. Bush has the game downloaded to a level of like the greats.
Well, he never had young linebacker disease. He was just instantly plugged in.
He also didn't have to play that much as a freshman.
Well, I mean, McGrone is a redshirt freshman.
Yeah, so, true. So this is like the year.
This
that
is year two
Bush
for
started,
both of them. Yeah. So the interesting thing now is we didn't see James Ross in this game. He did dress.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that at least says they're thinking about a redshirt because this is, you know, his junior year.
Right.
So Glasgow will graduate. The weak side position will be open for him. You know, Michigan can get a couple years with those two next to each other. Feeling pretty good about that.
Yeah.
And he's got a game left, so you could save him for this game, which Michigan will not need him. Probably not going to need him in the Maryland game. Indiana looks like...
And that, you want him for Michigan State.
No. Because what are you talking about? Like, they're not... Score.
He's an in-state guy.
You could play him in the Ohio State game, and then, you know, a bowl game isn't that important. So like, you could get a red shirt on him, and then that'd be nice.
Yeah.
So, all right, but that's all we have to say about the Notre Dame game. Why don't we take a break, come back, and talk about basketball?
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah.
Recently, Seth and I were having lunch, and he asked me what someone in their 30s married with children should be doing with their finances. I rattled off some gibberish, and then he said, that's what your next ad should be. So here we go. Hey, it's Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. I'm a certified financial planner, founder, and president at
Peak Wealth Management.
And it would be smart for you to start paying close attention at this point. I think you would want to consider the following. Max out your 401k. I like the Roth 401k, as long as your income is under $415,000 per year. Max out your Roth IRA. Set up your mortgage on a 15-year amortization, add $500 a month for each kid's $529, invest with the appropriate risk tolerance, make sure you have enough life insurance to cover debts, education, and income replacement. Don't take out any credit card debt. Pay all your bills each month. Make sure you have an emergency fund. And if your needs are any more complicated than that, connect with us at peakwm.com to book an appointment.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Say, do you like clickbait? Do you like articles that take about 5 minutes and zero knowledge to write? Well, you listen to this podcast and you probably read MGO Blog, which means you don't, and it's probably time to get that Athletic subscription. I'm going to get you 40% off. Just listen in. The Athletic is a subscription-based sports news site delivering in-depth sports coverage for diehard fans. You read exclusive stories on Michigan football by Nick Baumgartner and Austin Meek, Michigan basketball by Brendan Quinn, national stories from writers you know like Bruce Feldman, Stuart Mandel, and Seth Davis. There's no ads, no pop-ups, no clickbait. The Athletic is setting a new standard for sports news coverage. You can join today for Wolverines content you won't find anywhere else and get 40% off your annual subscription by going to theathletic.com/mgoblog. Again, that's athletic.com/mgoblog.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
Welcome back to MGO Radio 5.8, taped from the Bow Store on Main Street. Not actually in a bathtub.
Yeah. That's Nuciano, by the way, the music that we're playing.
All right.
It's an indie-inspired reggae. finding all these like cool mixes now. Yeah.
That's too cool for our podcast.
She's a Detroiter, so.
Basketball season kicks off tonight.
Tonight, yeah.
Against Saginaw Valley State, the Cardinal.
It's a red bird. I just said Angry Birds in my head. That's the Saginaw Valley State Angry Birds.
So by the time you hear this, the game will probably be over. It just occurred to me.
We don't have to prefer. And I don't know a thing about them anyway. We're not going to preview those guys. It's like
no. But I was about to be like, so what are we going to look for in this game? And the answer is, well, you already know,
right?
But. We will soldier on anyway. Based on the open practice, I think we're going to see some interesting lineup decisions. So where does Colin Castleton play? How many minutes does he get? And how many minutes do the guys at the two get? And who are those guys? So you have four guys competing for two spots, I guess. Mm-hmm. So you have DeJulius. You have Eli Brooks, you have Cole Bajima, and then you have Adrian Nunez. Based on what I saw from the open practice, I don't think Nunez is going to be in that so much.
No, I mean, his hope for this year was going to be a guy off the bench, you know, shoot 40% and
that's
give you spacing.
Hypothetically possible, but like the his defensive abilities, he got blown by too much, I think. So if you have Eli Brooks, who at the very least is a solid defender, and honestly, like, I know people say he's a practice player, but he looked pretty good in the open scrimmage. Like, he had 3 assists and probably should have had 5 or 6, but, you know, he had those non-assists where you get a guy a good look and he gets fouled.
Uh-huh.
And then a couple of his would-be assists went to Austin Davis.
Right. He was playing with, they put him with, like, the, like,
yeah,
guys.
He was, like, with the second team when it was, like, the second team is,
well, Austin Davis.
Not yeah. as good as you would hope. So, I mean, he had a couple shots, and I just felt like...
Was he shooting, like, when he had the opportunity? Because that's been his bugaboo forever.
Well, I mean, it's different when he's playing off-ball with Simpson, which he would do.
Uh-huh.
You know, he was mostly on the ball, so he's not going to just pull up from three. The guy who's going to pull up from three is DeJulius. He canned a couple. Obviously, his overall efficiency in this game was not good, but... He also got kind of, I mean, he spent a large portion of the scrimmage as the other guy going up against Simpson with the backups. And that's just...
Right.
Not only are you going up against Xavier Simpson...
There's nowhere to put the ball either.
Right. And I love the fact that Ace posted the guards preview today.
Uh-huh.
And Sam Vecini, who works for The Athletic, just posted something on YouTube that's just called Xavier Simpson Hell. It's just Simpson playing on ball defense. So, like, I feel
how far does it go back? Is it go back like a couple of years?
It's only about a minute or two.
Okay,
so it's not an in depth thing, but it is a possibility that David DeJulius playing not Xavier Simpson is going to be a bit of a revelation. But he's going to be playing the two for all but 5 minutes a game, right?
Yeah.
So what does he need to be? He needs to be a knockdown shooter, and the secret scrimmage where the opposition plays 1-3-1 the whole time, and he goes 7 of 8 from three. You know, that's a turnaround from last year, in part because he's actually getting real minutes
uh-huh.
instead of garbage.
Right, and coming in as a backup, like, you kind of lose your personality in the.
Well, also you just end up jacking up shots late in blowouts mm-hmm. that have no. There's no good shots in those possessions. And then in the open scrimmage, you know, he's able to, like, get Isaiah Livers, who's an excellent defender, back on his heels and then raise up from three and can it. And last year, you know, we saw a couple instances where he was trying to do that and didn't have the, I don't know if it's athleticism or oomph or confidence or skill to back off a D1 defender and get off a good off-the-dribble three-point look.
I mean, he always had the talent. Do you remember that game against Foster Lawyer that, like, yes. we were all watching? Yeah.
That was literally posted on the site today by Ace.
I haven't
as
been able
part
to
of something I quoted.
It's I haven't fine. Been able to read anything.
It's fine. Just, you can just be assured that whenever basketball is happening, someone has recently posted the Clarkson David DeJulius game where he has, like, 5 off-the-dribble threes in that game. So
right.
he has that Walton air and... If he's going to be a knockdown shooter on spot-ups, then, yeah, I think you can play him significant minutes. You know, defense is a question, not so much for Brooks, who is a good defender. And his synergy stats are off the charts. And synergy defensive stats, I think they're a little wobbly.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, because they don't really take into account the fact that, okay, whenever Eli Brooks is on the court, is he checking Cassius Winston? No.
Right.
So, who you get matters a lot as well. But I don't know if I have hope that Eli Brooks is going to be a plus player, but I think he can be like a net average player. Like, because he's going to be a plus on defense. And
he's a tool that he's something. I'm glad he's still around, by the way. And, like, because for a time there, it was like, okay, I guess he's going to be gone too. But, yeah. There's nobody else in the two. And everybody's playing the two other than, you know, yeah. Wagner. But, like, no one else is going to be a great defender or just even, a plus defender.
Yeah.
So, sometimes, you know, you're going to be in a lot of situations where you're on the road and you're trying to put a game away and having, you know, someone who's been around the program for a long time who knows the defense, who knows what he's doing out there, it's going to – sometimes you just need to suffocate a game.
Yeah. And then the question for the 3 and 4 spots is where is Isaiah Livers play? Because Isaiah Livers is going to get 35 minutes. And is it going to be at the 3? Is it going to be at the 4?
I think it's not on him as much as the other guys who are available.
Yeah. Precisely. And I think that he's going to be mostly a 3. Because in the open practice, they played Castleton mostly as a 4.
Mm-hmm.
And he got some minutes at the 5, but he was playing next to Teske a lot. And I feel like that's probably not a coincidence.
Is that a bad sign? Well, Johns has got the ankle, but...
Well, I mean, Johns had the ankle issue, and he also played the rest. He played all his minutes at the 4.
Okay.
I mean, you need 40 minutes at that position, right?
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily think that's a bad sign for Johns. One of the things that I did like is Michigan's out pushing in transition a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And...
Which is what they said they were going to do.
Yeah, but the thing I liked this fact is that Michigan would get what looked like a pretty good transition opportunity, and probably 3 or 4 times Castleton or Johns would come over and wipe it out.
Okay.
So having those guys at the 4 gives you that off-ball,
right.
Jaren Jackson, Nate Ruvers help defense.
Right.
Where guys can come from unexpected places and they're excellent shot blockers. So that's a thumbs up.
You have Castleton and Teske on the court. You have a huge defense already.
Yeah. And so Teske's going to be 30 minutes a game guy. Castleton is definitely going to get the backup minutes there. So do you want Castleton playing 10 minutes a game or 15 minutes a game? Or are you going to play them together? And I feel like he's a guy who can hit threes. He can stretch the floor. Can he stay in front of Big Ten fours? If you look at the Big Ten fours in this league.
Yeah.
I think most of them, yeah.
Yeah. That position's been hit pretty hard.
Well, and also, like, if he has to give a little bit of ground because, you know, he's not as quick as a guy, he's able to make that up because he's...
Right, if he's 4 feet away from you, his arm is still on your arc.
So, like, I feel like he's... Like, Ruvers was actually really effective as a 4, even on on-ball defense.
Yeah, he'd stay in the paint.
not quite.
Get that arm up.
Not quite in the paint, but, like... You know, you're looking at that guy and you're like, okay, let's go after him. And, like, Iggy goes after him. And he does a pretty good job.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I feel like that's workable. And then what he gives you as a rebounder, what he gives you as a shot blocker is worth putting out there. And Johns, you know, there's been a lot of offseason talk about his mental state. Like, can he be the D.O. double G?
I mean, that is not who his – that's not, never been his personality.
No, so if he's not going to be that, can he give you enough kind of – I don't know what to call it, like peripheral contributions to be on the court.
I mean, he's a larger guy who can go out to the 3-point line.
Well, he's probably the most athletic guy on the team now.
Yeah,
and I mean, he can jump out of the gym. So is he going to be assertive enough on the offensive boards to pick up some points? You know, is he going to block some shots? And what is he going to be able to do as kind of a third or fourth banana? Because like he did can an open corner 3. He wasn't a great shooter in high school. He's a 31% three-point shooter in his last high school year.
Oh.
But, you know, people develop in that department. And Castleton,
they used to develop more when Beeline was around.
Well, I mean, I don't know
what the program's going to develop now.
Yeah. And kind of, I think people are excessively down on him because he looked bad last year, but they're trying to play him at the center, which he's not.
Right.
And then they move him to the 4, and he doesn't know what to do. Defensive.
I'm not down on him. I was like hopeful that they would get a lot, that Howard would be able to be like exactly the right guy for him to kind of teach him how to play. But this is something the practice reports say too, that he's just not going to be that kind of guy.
I mean, but he can not be that kind of guy, and he can be an 18% usage guy based on what Simpson sets up for him.
Right.
Like if there's a rim runner on this team, it's him.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, Teske's a pretty good finisher at the rim, too, but, like, he can be a GR3-like presence, right?
And he can defend, too.
Do we know that?
I mean, that's
we haven't seen that.
We haven't seen it. Well, it's going to be... this goes on the list of things that we wish we had seen tonight after you listen to this podcast. How was Brandon Johns' defense?
Yeah, you guys let us know. Pretty good, huh?
Yeah.
Pretty good podcast. And then, I mean, X is X.
Yeah.
Will he be able to drive left, I think, is the question. Will he be able to improve his shooting? I'm expecting him to take another increment forward because he's
his shot
dog offseason.
Yeah, but his shot is never going to be...
No.
Yeah.
And they moved the line back. So, and then Teske, similar situation. The question with him is, is he effective as a post-up player? Because he's actually going to be asked to do that now.
And not just a post-up player, but like being able to get entry passes to him.
Yeah, I mean, but that's not a Teske question.
Yeah, but the guys who are really good at that have like these little games they play where like, you know, they know where to go and get the ball. So if we're going to be playing Castleton there, you could have like a Castleton Teske game where they're just like playing above the rim.
Well, so we've talked about this with Matt D quite a bit about the horn set where you have the two bigs kind of at the elbows and you play off that. That was a lot of what Minnesota did last year with Jordan Murphy and Otoru. Now, Michigan could do that with Castleton and Teske.
But 2 more inches than those guys.
Wow. I think
Murphy was
6'6", right? Like,
oh, yeah. I mean,
so
I thought he was taller than that. But
it listed him taller than that, but he's not going on the court. So they've got 2-3 inches there. And, you know, Teske hasn't really shown it very much, but he's capable of being a guy who creates offense with his passing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, because the question for the whole team is like, okay, Xavier Simpson is going to have a top 10 assist rate.
Right.
He's going to have a usage rate probably 22-24% because he's going to get some of his own shots and he's going to be able to feed his teammates. He was already at 15 in assist rate last year, so doesn't have that far to go to be a top 10 guy. Where does the rest of your usage come from and who's making those shots, generating those shots? So, you know, Brooks, DDJ, candidates, Livers, no.
Right.
And then Castleton, no. Johns, no. Eli Brooks, maybe. So then you're going to look at Teske as trying to be
right.
a guy who can, you know, shoot from the elbow or pass it or put it on the deck for one dribble and try to get to the basket.
I mean, Wagner was supposed to fix a lot of these questions, and with him out for a while, it's like now we have to look at that whole thing again.
Right, and then the question is, like, so what do you do with Wagner when he comes back? Because what can he defend? Like, can he defend a 2? I hope so.
Yeah. it's going to be situational, and it's also going to be, like, you know, we'll have a lot more information at that point over who's efficient, who's not, whose usage needs to take it down. Like, if Livers is picking up more usage and liking it, like, then... Yeah.
So, like, for Livers to get more usage, he's got to be able to attack a closeout, and that's not what we've seen. We've seen him be more aggressive looking for his shot on the perimeter, and he should definitely do that because he's a knockdown shooter in Michigan. I mean, last year there were several opportunities for him to shoot from 3, and I'm like, take that, and didn't take it. And this year that can't happen.
Yeah.
This year, I mean, it couldn't happen last year either, to be honest. But this year, like, if he's got a look, he's got to take it.
Yeah, he's moved up the alpha list on his team this year, too. So I think that changes a guy and changes his approach to the game, I think.
I mean, the interesting thing to me is that we're talking to Charles Matthews in Chicago for the event. And someone asked him I don't remember what the context was, but he says, like, this is going to be Isaiah Livers' team.
Right.
And then he immediately grabs the mic back. He's like, it's going to be Xavier's team.
Everyone gives him a look like, huh?
But just the fact that, he's on a team with Teske and Simpson, and that was even like something that popped into his head.
Yeah.
I think it's an encouraging sign for him. It's just like, what does that look like? I hope it looks like Ryan Klein.
Yeah.
Like, that's who I want Isaiah Livers to be. The gunner from the outside who's just unconscious, has no conscience. So is he going to be the guy who attacks closeouts? Every once in a while. Like, Ryan Klein got to the bucket a little bit, but he's just a shooter, and that's fine. He just needs to be a high volume, just a shooter. Freshman Zach Irvin. 20% usage, 29% of Michigan shots. I'll take it.
Yeah.
But this team should be in the tournament. I don't think that, you know, you're replacing Charles Matthews with a guy who's an excellent defender in Livers. You have Brooks. You have Simpson. You have Teske. It's likely this defense sticks in the top 10. Now, they were so good at defense last year, and Texas Tech was so good at defense that, you know, going from 2 to 10 is actually a pretty big step back.
Right.
But, you know, if they're a top 10 defense, you know, they're not going to be in the Elite Eight.
Yeah, there's a lot of ways they can get good at defense. I think this team is going to be a lot tougher if they can get in the playoffs, they're not going to be the team you want to face.
No.
Because they're going to take some losses early this year when no one can score.
And, like, really, like, X can take a step forward and be a guy who papers over a lot of problems just because, you know, he's going to find nooks and crannies. He's going to be able to create shots despite the fact that his shot is not
right.
You know, hold people on the outside. So I think it's workable.
Can they get a win against State this year?
Yeah, they can get a win against State. Like, why did they lose against State last year? It's because their offense was completely borked up whenever Tillman switched on a guy.
Right.
And they couldn't feed the post.
Right.
Well, if there's a guy who's going to fix that, it's Juwan Howard.
Okay.
So, I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, Michigan State's a really good team, but
yeah.
They're not going to be favored going into it. But I feel decently about Michigan's ability to deal with the approach that got Michigan State kind of over the hump after a few years where it looked like Michigan was just
right
over
there's this one secret position that I keep on going back to whenever I'm trying to.
one thing that people
I'm bad at phrasing right now. I'm sorry. We weren't getting a whole lot out of the two last year, except for in the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
And like,
don't say that around Ace.
I was trying to find a nice way of putting it, but it's true.
Yes, yeah, so, I mean,
was not hitting his shots for most of the Big Ten season, and so if you have a downgrade, like what's going to happen at the two this year? Well, I mean,
it's not going to be a downgrade against Michigan State. I'll accept that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and like, I mean, Eli Brooks is going to have the same. Not going to have pool efficiency, but like he, between DDJ and Brooks, and then a half a season when you have Wagner, like you might get more out of the two than you got last year from an
NBA
guy. It's
going to be more than half a season. Wagner will be back pretty quickly, I'd imagine. And then what you get out of him, I don't know. But we're going to take a break, come back, and a brief segment on Maryland.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
It can be a rough ride along the information superhighway. That's why we build our e-commerce websites tough enough to handle the load. With the capacity to take hundreds of simultaneous online transactions and the stability of load-balanced co-located server architectures, a website from Human Element performs in the roughest conditions. Thousands of products? No problem. We'll throw in the tools to manage them with precision and efficiency. All with a design slick enough to make you think your girlfriend might be impressed. So load it up and hit the gas and let Human Element show you the way. Special offers available for returning lessees. Financing available with approved credit to qualified buyers. Client participation may affect savings. Optional equipment available at additional cost. See human-element.com for details.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus with all the amenities you expect. Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout-out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
This is Matt Demrest, the owner of Homesure Lending. We're a local mortgage company here to help you purchase with confidence and refinance with ease. People don't get mortgages very often, so it can be confusing. We'll break down every single line item so that it all makes sense. And at the end of the day, if we're not giving you the best deal, we'll tell you to go with the other company. We're here to offer our simple mortgage guidance.
This is Seth Fisher from MGO Blog. Over the years, we've sent dozens of readers to use Homesure Lending, and every review that's come back has been raving. I myself used them to refinance after doing our original loan through our bank. I was amazed how much smoother the process was for our company. Complicated loan. Brian used them, you should use them too.
Finding out whether it makes sense or not to refinance or getting pre-approved to buy a new home is easy. Head over to homesurelending.com. That's HOMESURE lending.com/mgoblog to find out more. Or call us at 734-531-9950. That's 734-531-9950. I've got two of my favorite people here with me. Kind of an annual tradition. Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
11.
Colby, how about you?
9.
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
NMLS number 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
The University of Michigan was the place we all came together. It's where we pursued our curiosities and where we rallied around things that really mattered. The Alumni Association has now made it possible for you to reconnect with your fellow Wolverines around endless topics. Within alumni online communities, it's where you can join in the discussion or start your own on any subject from your career, identity, hobbies, or interests. Go to umalumni.com/communities and keep the conversation going.
If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com.
For the band, man. King of dancehall. Yeah, yeah. Instead of Matt telling us so, lyrical champion once again. Let me tell the people him so. Yo, they keeping us in the hall.
Welcome back to MGO Radio 5.8.
In a bathtub.
Tape from the bookstore on Main Street in a bathtub. We got bathtubs on the mind after last week.
Yeah. It was a little wet.
Well, I wrote the column on the K-pop bathtubs.
Yeah, and I learned a few things about ponchos.
Indeed, it was that kind of week. If we're delaying talking about Maryland, yep,
they've had a season so far.
So they dropped Matt Canada, brought in Mike Loxley, but the ghost of Matt Canada is still haunting this program.
Uh-huh.
You know, they are wildly explosive and do nothing else on various. Most of their plays.
And they have a lot of little slot running backs who yeah. You don't know if they should be slot receivers or running backs.
So they just have a lot of those guys.
Yeah.
Like Anthony McFarland has been at Maryland in one form or the other for the last decade. Right? Like,
yeah.
Just the same guy. Yeah. Got a different name this time. Got a different haircut.
Yeah. And like Lorenzo Harrison's still around when he's injured. Like, yeah. But like he's the same guy. Yeah.
What they don't have is they don't have, like, the clear NFL receiver they usually do inexplicably. Their wide receiver core is basically Notre Dame's.
They yeah.
One big downfield dude.
Right. They had a guy injured who, Deshaun Jones, who last year I was like, this guy's going to be a star. And then he was injured at the beginning of the year. Mm. That's been a theme with them. DJ Turner is the slot receiver who is actually a little bit dangerous, too. He's taking, I think, what we could call a Rutgers redshirt. Where, like, you redshirt to preserve your eligibility for...
Oh, he got a DUI.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah, he got a DUI, and then he's redshirting now.
Okay.
So...
I thought it was, like, a redshirt and I'm out of here kind of thing.
You gotta Google.
Yeah.
Gotta Google.
I gotta Google better.
And then they have Terrence Davis, who you may remember if you're a recruit neck. He's one of their guards. He's pretty good.
Yeah, he's another guy who's hurt, by the way. He's kind of coming back from an injury.
And then you charted some pretty gross offensive line numbers.
Oh, God. Yeah, there's a sliding scale of cyan. There's, like, cyan bad, where, like, you're just a, you know, you're bad. And there's Marcus Minor, yeah. Who does not, he should just not. He was a top 250 recruit, too. But
really?
It's Maryland, so like they're playing guards at tackle again.
Yeah,
and that guy definitely should be a guard in 2 years, and does not belong as head tackle right now. They list him at 298. He might be in like the 270s.
And their other tackle is not much better.
He's a big gump. He's 6'6" and just kind of.
Man, I haven't heard that since seventh grade.
Here I am. He's very easy to get. UJ is going to be like, why is nobody blocked? After like Liam Eichenberg, who's like a top ranked. Yeah, this is going to feel very different from that standpoint.
And then they have the usual quantity of Maryland quarterback hijinks. So Justin Jackson's their starter. He goes out. Josh Jackson's their starter. He goes out for a couple games. Piggy comes in. Piggy goes out. So they're playing redshirt freshman. What's his name?
Tyler Dessou.
And he goes 4-13 against Minnesota. And then after the game, Loxley is asked about why he pulled Jackson. And he was like, well, I just didn't have confidence in him mentally. And I'm like, but you had confidence in guy?
In the redshirt freshman, who they list at 6'1", is definitely not 6'1".
No. And then you go look at their stats, and if you take out Howard and Rutgers, and that does not leave like a murderer's row of defenses
right.
on the schedule. He's averaging 5.5 yards an attempt and completing 46% of his passes.
Yeah. Well, Josh Jackson, I think I got him in, like, it wasn't an all-time low, but it was close to 36% against Penn State for downfield success rating.
That's not good.
And so, yeah, so like his receiving, his passing stats look good because of like Buffalo and whatnot, but whoever they play, Howard, yeah, and because he throws screens to his little micro machines, and yeah, then they go nuts. But I had him charted against Syracuse for 7 inaccurate balls, and I had 3 X's, and you know, in X is like, you know, when you throw it and there's nobody on the screen to even guess like who it was thrown at.
Yeah. So the this offense is going to do a whole bunch of nothing, and then it's about like, can they break a screen big? Can their running back break a couple tackles, or just outrun a couple tackles? Can their Chase Claypool,
right,
do Chase Claypool things downfield? If they do that, they'll get some points, and if they don't, they'll get shut out.
So it's 56-14 or 56-0,
pretty much.
Yeah.
Speaking of 56, the other side of the ball for Maryland, not a whole lot better. So Tino Ellis is out for the year. Antoine Richardson is out for the year. Two of the starters in their secondary.
Yep.
Their other cornerback who came in as the starter has been bounced out in and out of the lineup, if that's correct.
Yeah, he's hurt. He's not the guy coming back in to like be.
So, but is he going to play in this game?
I'm guessing because he played in the last one.
Okay.
Didn't
you said he had to leave though, right?
Well, so he had an interception where he outran Rashad Bateman down the field, caught it like a punt, turned around, went into the end zone, turned around, and started running it back, and then like his knee gave out. Yikes. And instead of going down, he tried to like walk for a while, and the blocking was so good. There's like a good like 15 seconds maybe of
what?
Like, it's the weirdest
you
play.
You have no idea how long 15 seconds is on a football play.
All right. All right. All right, radio, let's time this.
It's not 15 seconds.
It's maybe not. The whole play is 15 seconds.
This is extremely, extremely, what are we doing?
This is a 26 second clip.
Oh my God.
Okay, and I started at the beginning. All right, start your timers.
This is the worst segment we've ever done.
This guy's still running around.
We're literally
around,
just watching just something standing, nobody
he's
else not, can
he's
see.
He's just kind of walking. How long is this? Could this be 15 seconds?
He's not walking. It's more of a trot. It's not 15 seconds. All right. Anyway. So he's actually pretty good.
He's really good. He's a guy that we were looking at for for the preseason as like a possible Big Ten guy. Like,
so problem for Maryland is that the guy who's not him is now a true freshman.
Uh-huh.
One of two true freshmen. And like one of them was ranked 800th, the other guy was ranked 1500th. This is a transition class for Loxley, obviously.
Right.
So not even a freshman that you could have some reasonable confidence in stepping into the lineup. And that's why they gave up 6.5 yards an attempt to Rutgers.
Yeah.
This is the most damning stat I can think of.
I mean, the guys are problems, and the John Hoke is the new defensive coordinator. And like Loxley is a – John Hoke has not been in college except for like a brief moment in 2015 as like a DB's coach.
Uh-huh.
He has not been in college since he was with Steve Spurrier at Florida.
Okay.
So college football has changed a little bit since then, and he's been in the NFL this whole time. So I don't know how good he is at defending red concepts
stuff, yeah.
And yeah, like all the things. I mean, his defense has some interesting ideas. That reminds me a little bit about Brady Hoke's defense. So like,
is that I don't. All right. The other thing about them is that they're really tiny up front. So
yeah,
their base is like a Wisconsin 2-4-5.
The 2-4-5, right?
And one of the guys who's in the four who plays on the line of scrimmage is 220 pounds.
Yeah, he's the Ohio State transfer.
And the other guy is 250 pounds.
Clemson transfer.
So their strong side end-ish is
right.
250. Their weak side end-ish is 220. And then their linebackers are basically Glasgow-sized.
Uh-huh.
So.
And one of them is the guy that, like, every time I chart this guy, I'm like, how is this guy still playing?
And then
they actually tried to replace him this year, and they couldn't.
And then I went back to the Wisconsin UFR to be like, all right, how many times did they actually run pin and pull against these guys?
Like three?
Once. We have to remember that was the game where they gave up on the run like two
on the first
drives
drive,
in,
yeah.
And they had like a total of 9 running back carries. It was completely bizarre.
I drank away this game so well, Brian. Why are you bringing this back up?
And there was a pull error on the pin and pull, so we didn't even get to see them run
right.
Like a correctly executed pin and pull the whole time. So I wouldn't hear the words, this is like the Wisconsin defense, and be like, oh no.
Right. No, and like, it's not that hard. Like, you flip a tight end on these guys, and all of a sudden the 220-pound guy is the guy, you know, taking on a double team. And that
or just taking on a tight end down block.
Or taking, right, and tight ends are doing fine on him because they still have 40 pounds on this guy. So this
should just be, I mean, you could toss it up to one of Michigan's receivers against a true freshman.
Yeah.
You can just pave them. Like, they have no sacks. 15 of their sacks are against Howard, Rutgers, or Syracuse. And if it sounds like Syracuse doesn't belong in that discussion, Syracuse is last in the country. They've given up 42 sacks this year. So they have 3 sacks in their other 5 games. So they don't get to the quarterback. They have true freshmen. Their safeties aren't good. They're tiny up front. Like, Penn State put up 59 on these guys, and, like, that's not.
They're just getting gashed. They're getting gashed for 8 yards of play on the in the run. And then, like, if you want to pass, you can. They have one. They have Antoine Brooks,
their space backer.
Right, who they finally are playing back at space backer instead of trying to make him a safety because he's not a safety.
Right.
But he is kind of like Peppers-esque in the in his role. All
right, well, so, like, let's not do that. Let's do everything else.
Yeah, whatever. Right. Just don't try the edge against him, and everything else should work.
All right, well, so and if you think about Penn State's offense this year, it's been very start and stop. They get big plays. They don't really consistently get down the field. They did against this team. You know, Minnesota just put up 52. They rushed for 350 yards. I mean, it's pretty much game over for Maryland this year, and this should be. I'm actually a little surprised the spread's only 21. Like, I haven't felt that in a long time.
Yeah, well. At Maryland, it's their homecoming.
Yeah, but there's going to be...
Like, I'm surprised. Like, why would you look at your schedule and be like,
Because maybe you can, like, not have the stadium be half Michigan fans if it's homecoming.
Right.
That's the only thought I have, like, because it's not even going to be a home field advantage for them.
Yeah, like, when Penn State came, like, their Penn State fans literally invaded the student section. Like, they went in there and sat, and, like, walked all the way down and sat down in the student section.
The 4 people there must have been really cheesed.
No, it was the ushers. It was just down to ushers. And they were cheesed.
They were cheesed off. All right. Well, so this should be...
Yeah, 56-14?
I think I said 40-11 because I just... I'm going to fumble the ball or something. Whatever. But, like, this is...
No, we don't do that anymore, Brian. That's early season Michigan. This is, like, you know, Murder Wolf season again.
This is going to be the worst team Michigan has played, except for Rutgers and maybe Middle Tennessee.
I mean, now that Illinois is kind of repaired, like...
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Illinois thing doesn't look so bad anymore. So this is a good lead-up to, like, Michigan State and Indiana.
It is kind of
season.
A ramp straight up towards the end of the year, which we're not going to talk about.
Indiana.
Got it better than